The Criminal Justice and Public Safety Subcommittee will come to order. Lindsay, please call the roll.
Chair Byrd.
Here.
Vice Chair Brannon.
Here.
Ranking Member Grieco.
Here.
Representatives Barnaby.
Here.
Busata Cabrera. Busata Cabrera. Bush.
Here.
Chambliss.
Here.
Fetterhoff.
Here.
Gregory.
Here.
Haig. Hart.
Here.
Learned.
Here.
Mainey.
Here.
Rizzo.
Here.
Roach has been excused. Snyder.
Here.
Tuck.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay, and good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to remind everyone to please turn off and silence any electronic devices. And also, as a reminder for our members and presenters, please ensure that you turn your microphone on when you are speaking and off when you are finished. Members, we have three bills on the agenda today, Public Defender Duties, HB 67, The Purple Alert, HB 79, and False Reports of Crimes, HB 371. And we are going to start with HB 79, Purple Alert, by Representative Casello. And, sir, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee, for hearing this good bill. I'd like to... I filed this legislation in hopes of saving lives, along with my prime co-sponsor, Representative Will Hite. This bill establishes the Purple Alert, which can be activated when an individual falls in the parameters set forth, which includes those with mental, cognitive, intellectual, and developmental disability, or one or more brain injury, or another mental, physical, or emotional disability that is not related to substance abuse, who goes missing and whose disappearance is a credible threat of intimate danger or serious bodily harm to themselves. This alert would function similar to the Silver Alert, but for the subset of individuals who do not fall under the criteria of other established alert plans. As we know, the Amber Alert applied to a child who has been abducted and is in grave danger. The Silver Alert must be 60 years or older, traveling by a motor vehicle with an identified license plate. This bill requires the FDLE to establish and implement this alert and to work with the FDOT and the DHSMV, the Department of Lottery and local law enforcement, to broadcast information to the public and media about these missing adults. This can be through lottery terminals, activation of message signs on state highways, and through cellular alerts to subscribers. These alerts can be targeted to geographic areas with jurisdiction so as to focus on the area where the missing adult is believed to be. In an effort to maintain the independence, privacy, and dignity of a missing adult, the dissemination of sensitive health or diagnostic information will not be used unless absolutely necessary. In addition, the alert shall only be activated when sufficient descriptive information and circumstances surrounding the disappearance are available. The AARP, Disability Rights of Florida, and the Florida Developmental Disability Council all support this bill. If I might add like a human interest story to this, why this, one of the reasons why I filed this bill. It comes from a constituent. It was received by Senator Laurie Berman, who covers a lot of my district. And what it says is that Beverly Marshall was a mother of a young man named Joshua Marshall. And Joshua became disabled when he was 14 months old due to a virus that caused heart failure and a lack of oxygen in his brain. As a young man, Joshua and his father had moved to Port St. Lucie. He had been there just over a week. Josh wandered from the house late at night, and he'd wandered for a while. He was found on his way to a 7-Eleven gas station. He was there for well over an hour. He cannot ask for help, as he did not speak or write. The workers in the store had no idea who he was or why he was out front. People saw him wearing no shoes, walking with a lopsided gait due to his disability, and he was distraught. They assumed he had been drinking. They completely misread the situation. He was crying and barefoot, and no one helped. They did not know that he was disabled. They did not know he desperately needed help. He finally wandered across a busy intersection towards a fire station which had a pond. Josh was very attracted to water and walked right into the pond, which was about 30 feet from the fire station. He drowned. This is why the Purple Alert is so very important to me. helping that segment of population of the Josh Marshalls in this world. I look for your favorable support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Members, we are now in questions. Are there any questions on the bill? Yes, Representative Gregory, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Representative Casolo. I just have a couple of questions, and I appreciate you reaching out to me. We've talked about some of these already. You mentioned, you know, how the bill originated and who supports it, but I didn't catch if you said Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Have you worked with them on the bill? Are they supportive?
Yes.
And I note that in the cost section of the bill, there's an estimate for 3 full-time employees and a technology cost of $170,000. Is that just a one-time cost, and then the FTEs are recurring? Is that the total cost?
The cost that we got, the estimated cost we got would be $152,000 in recurring funds, $170,000 in non-recurring funds, an associated salary rate of $83,000 are authorized for the purpose of this implementing this act.
One more. Thank you, Chair. I'm just curious, in the discussions with FDLE, did they have any alternative proposals to achieve the same goal?
We haven't discussed that, sir.
Thank you.
Any other members in questions? Anybody else? Okay, we're in public testimony. Oh, no, there are no amendments on the bill, so now we are in public testimony. Excellent. We have Nancy Stewart, Federation of Manufactured Homeowners of Florida, Inc., waves in support. And that is all the public testimony. Members, we are now in debate. Any debate on the bill? Any debate? Seeing none, Representative Casolo, you are recognized to close on your bill.
I waive the close, Chair.
Representative Casolo, having closed on this bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 79 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Usada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig? Hart?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach has been excused. Snyder?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Byrd?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 79 reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Casolo.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Welcome. All right, members, next up, we are going to have HB 67, Public Defender Duties, by Representative Fernandez-Barkin. You are recognized to, sir, to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, what my bill does is essentially, it's very simple. It does not allow the court to appoint the public defender on a case that already has private counsel. And it does not allow the court to appoint them simultaneously, okay? It's essentially a situation where it does not allow for two chefs to be in the kitchen at the same time. It's very simple, very straightforward, not much more to it. Now, you may ask, how did this come about? This came about in Tampa, specifically. It was a serial killer, Michael Keatley, that what had happened was that his family hired private counsel. They spent $200,000. The judge saw that this was not going the right way, and in order to avoid an ineffective assistance of counsel claim down the road, the judge appointed the public defender to represent Mr. Keatley at the same time, simultaneously, with this private counsel. I see Representative Hart is nodding her head yes, and I hope that in debate she will elaborate on it. And that's what happened. I think it's a waste of taxpayer funds, and I hope you all feel the same way and ask for your support.
Thank you, members. Are there questions for the sponsor on the bill? Yes, Representative Grieco, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, the only question I had, and it came up during our recent review of the bill, how would this affect if someone was working with, say, the Innocence Project or another pro bono organization where someone has the public defender appointed for them and then somebody who's unpaid, nonprofit, something along those lines comes in? Does that get addressed in the bill or are they negatively impacted by the bill?
That's not addressed in the bill, but I'd be open to amendments to make sure that the streams are, that there is no adverse consequence there, because the intention is not to prohibit the Innocence Project or a third party from participating and assisting an indigent client.
Rep. Hart, you're recognized. Oh.
I had the very same question, so thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Representative Bush.
What is the public defender's position on this bill in Dade County?
From my understanding, Mr. Martinez supports it. I did speak with him about it, and from what I recall, yeah. Yes.
Rep. Williams, recognized.
Thank you. Is it unusual for someone to have the ability to pay for an attorney, also have a pro bono attorney assigned to it?
I've seen it. I saw it firsthand when I was a public defender a couple of times where the judge would try and corner that to happen. It was very rare. It was very rare. And I say in the bill it's simultaneously, because typically what would happen if there was a private counsel on it, they would just file a motion to withdraw, and then the defendant would file an affidavit to certify their indigency, and then the court would just appoint the public defender. So, I mean, it's very rare, but in this specific case where what happened with Mr. Keatley, we're talking about a capital death penalty case where the attorneys are already, the death penalty defense attorneys are already have 15 to 20 cases. Their time is already limited, and they're being appointed on a case where there was a private counsel that had been paid $200,000 and essentially duplicative efforts. So, I mean, in general, it's very rare, Representative, that this would happen. But this is just to avoid, you know, this from happening again. So there is no doubt.
Anyone else with questions? All right, seeing none, there are no amendments on the bill in public testimony. No public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Anyone wishing to debate? Representative Hart, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the bill. I'm very familiar with the case that's happened in my district. And I fully agree that if you could afford to spend $200,000, then we need our public defenders to be working with all the other thousands of people that they're trying to assist. So I'm up on the bill.
Thank you, Representative.
Any other members in debate? All right, seeing none, Representative, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Wave close.
Thank you, Representative Fernandez-Barkin. Having waived close on the bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 67 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Busado Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig? Hart?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach has been excused. Snyder?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Byrd?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, show HB 67 reported favorably. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
All right. Last on our agenda today, members, is House Bill 371, False Reports of Crimes, by Vice Chair Brannon. Vice Chair Brannon, you are recognized to present your bill.
Am I on? I could have presented from up there, but I want to show everybody my new cowboy boots. My son brought those for me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. House Bill 371 was brought to my attention by the Florida Police Chiefs Association, and it addresses several problems. One is an issue called swatting, and I'm a retired policeman, but I had never heard of that. It's a relatively new phenomenon that is occurring, and I'll tell you a little bit about it in just a second. But Section 817.49 Florida statutes currently prohibits a person from willfully imparting, conveying, to be imparted, or conveyed to any law enforcement officer false information or reports concerning the commission of any crime when the person knows the report to be false and is false and that no such crime has been committed. That currently is a misdemeanor in Florida. HB 371 will amend the current statute to criminalize a false report that is made to any law enforcement officer and defines public safety agency. It also implements more severe penalties depending on the severity of the impact of the false report, if any, on a victim, other citizen, and law enforcement. The practice that the police chiefs are concerned about, that this law seeks to curtail, as I said, is called swatting. And that was made popular by YouTubers. Swatting is a malicious gag where someone calls the police and reports a serious situation like a hostage taking or a murder. Local officials will rush to the scene, but typically only find an innocent citizen, usually caught wildly off guard. It's no joke, though, as swatting creates danger to the public and to the law enforcement officers, as well as diverting valuable resources away from protecting the public. Swatting can manifest itself in a couple of ways. The person uses 911 and law enforcement response as a mechanism of revenge. They call 911 and make an egregious false report that will prompt a substantial law enforcement and other first responder response. The person claims they are a victim of a crime or are witnessing a crime, a dangerous situation usually involving firearms or an imminent threat of violence. An innocent party may be detained or injured prior to the truth of the matter being resolved. The other way is they can use 911 in these type of cases to lure law enforcement into an ambush situation. These scenarios have played out all around the country in the last couple of years, and in all instances, valuable public resources are drained, and there's potential for citizens and officers to be injured or killed. The staff analysis cites two incidents, one in California and one here in Florida, where false reports were made, prompting a law enforcement response that resulted in an innocent homeowner being killed in California, and here in Florida, a SWAT team being dispatched. Thus, the term swatting, that's where it comes from, hoping that a SWAT team will respond. The SWAT team was in contact with an innocent and alarmed couple here in Florida about a false murder claim. It also caused a nearby school to be locked down. And I'll read you a few examples. I'll read you one out of state, and then I'll read you some in-state ones. A 25-year-old gamer, that's somebody who plays games online, I guess, from Los Angeles, allegedly called the Wichita, Kansas Police Department and told them there was a hostage situation after getting in a disagreement with another player online playing the game Call of Duty. Barris gave the police the address of what he thought was the home of his Call of Duty competitor, but the address belonged to an unrelated person who was shot and killed by one of the responding officers. A little closer to home, since October of 2020, at least 25 swatting calls have been received by agencies in the Tampa Bay region. Let me read you a couple of those. The Clearwater Police Department on October 27th of 2020 received a call from a subject stating he had two female hostages in his basement and had placed pipe bombs on the street and demanded $10,000 and a pizza in exchange for the hostages. The caller threatened a shootout with the police. When officers responded to the address, the victim was interviewed and stated she plays the game Among Us and had been warned by another user that he was going to swat her. On just January 19th, a month ago, the Pasco County Sheriff's Office received a call from a subject threatening to kill his mother and commit suicide. The caller asked the dispatcher how many police officers were going to respond so that he knew how many to shoot when they got there. The Tampa Police Department had received similar calls from the same subject. In December, a couple of months ago, a family in Northport was targeted in a swatting incident. Local law enforcement received a call from a man confessing to hoarding explosives and killing his wife after seeing her cheat on him. Seemingly distraught, he gave them a play-by-play of the chaos unraveling. However, of course, the crime didn't happen. The alleged murder victim received a call telling her to go outside because the SWAT team had now arrived and was surrounding her home and needed to check and see if she was okay. The subject had hacked into the victim's Ring doorbell and was watching all this unfold, watching the law enforcement response in real time. I'll read you one more. On January 24th, the Winter Garden Police Department received a call from a man using an alias, claiming he had killed his father, was holding his family hostage, had a gun to his son's head, and would shoot or blow up any police who responded. The false calls resulted once again in a SWAT team being called out and responded. One of the houses was damaged, to which they were called to respond to, and where they had to break in. HB 371 amends the current statute in these ways to provide enhanced penalties. If the public safety agency response from a false report of a crime results in substantial cost to the responding agencies over the amount of $1,000, it would be a third-degree felony. If great bodily harm, permanent disfigurement, or permanent disability occur as a proximate result of a lawful conduct arising out of the response, it would be a second-degree felony. If a death occurs as a proximate result of lawful conduct arising out of the police's response, it would be a first-degree felony. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Members, are there questions on the bill? Any questions? All right. Seeing no questions, there is an amendment, barcode number 259835. Representative Brannon, you are recognized to present the amendment.
We're going to withdraw that at this time and work on tweaking it a little more.
Please show the amendment withdrawn. We are back on the bill and public testimony. Yes. Timothy Stanfield, Florida Police Chiefs Association. Waves in support. Thank you, Mr. Stanfield. And David Serdar, a senior concerned citizen. He is a proponent of the bill. All right. Members, we are in debate. Anyone in debate? All right. Vice Chair, you are recognized to close on your bill.
I'll close real quickly by telling you a personal example. Just before I retired, we had a murder that occurred where three counties joined, Baker, Duval, and Clay. The suspect had fled and gotten to the woods. And if you've ever seen that kind of response, we had two helicopters. We probably had 150 officers, K-9 teams from the police, and both we have a Florida State Prison nearby had responded. We had an individual in my county, in my hometown, call the sheriff's office and say that he had seen the suspect cross the highway about 12 miles away from where we were working. So, of course, we withdrew most of our folks. I'm talking about two helicopters and 100 people. And that causes a lot of chaos, not only from where we were before, but where we went to. And you can imagine when a helicopter starts swirling around the top of your house and everybody's out in their yards. And, of course, people start seeing what I call boogers. They think they saw somebody in their yard. So this went on for about 8 hours. What happened? That individual had just made it up. He just wanted to see what it looked like to have the police response move over there to our area. And what it allowed was the suspect was able to escape from the block of woods he was in, because we pulled a lot of resources, and get into another area where he somehow got around someone's residence, got a gun, went and got into a boat, and eventually caused a shootout, and he was killed by the SWAT team. So that's my example. Later that night, I interviewed him, and he admitted he just made it up, just wanted to see what would happen. And all I could charge him with was a misdemeanor. So there he had, I don't know how much money he had cost. And then, you know, well, how do you measure the murder suspect being able to get away and to get into the situation? It may have even caused his death because he was able to arm himself. So there's another good example of it's not just about these gamers, and I don't know a lot about that kind of stuff. Representative Maney, he's probably a gamer. He might can tell us. But that's my real-world example. But I think this would put up, they probably communicate a lot, and several states have changed the law regarding this, and I think if Florida does it, I think the word would get out pretty fast that it's not a good thing to do that. It's not going to be a misdemeanor anymore. Thank you.
Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 371 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Busada Cabrera? Yes. Bush?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Betterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach has been excused. Snyder?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Chair Byrd?
Yes.
17 yeas, zero nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Show HB 371 reported favorably. Members, that concludes our business for today. I appreciate your cooperation during committee weeks, and the next time we gather will be during session. So look forward to seeing everybody. Have a safe travels and journeys home over the next week. And with that, that concludes our agenda for today's meeting. And Representative Roach moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned. Is Roach here?